Well, good morning and welcome to the special Errol Barrow Day program on Brass Tacks. Today is the 21st day of January 2020. This is Errol Barrow Day, and I want to welcome you to a special program that we've conceptualized to celebrate the memory and the life of the father of independence, the Right Honorable Errol Walton Barrow. The program, of course, today is as normal in that you can call us on 434-1790. You can also email me at peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. Dennis Johnson is your producer this morning. And let's just tell you who is here. And before that, let me give you a brief summary of what we're going to be doing today. So apart from independence, Errol Barrow was central to the construction of our modern educational system in Barbados, with changes and innovations ranging from the 11 plus and the abolition of the fee-paying structure, which we call free education in the first phase. And then in the second phase, we had the setting up of the Barbados Community College and the University of the West Indies. We could call that the second phase. We are now well into 2021. Which is well into the 21st century, and COVID has highlighted the extent to which another revolution in education is urgently needed. There's clearly much that is wrong with our educational system today. However, this does not mean that these shortcomings are the fault of the architect, or one of the architects, which would have been Errol Walton Barrow. Or are they? Today, we want to explore this issue, and we want to ask a couple of important questions. So we're going to ask, certainly, what exactly was Errol Barrow's vision for education, and how far did he get in pursuit of this vision before he closed his eyes for the final time? We're going to ask whether Barrow's vision is fit for purpose then, and indeed, was it fundamentally flawed from the start? And if it wasn't flawed, then what went wrong, and what changes do we need to make it fit for purpose in this system? The guests that will help me speak to this issue over the next few hours, I have Mr. Leroy McLean. Leroy is a pivotal part of this program. He was the personal assistant to Errol Barrow, 1986-87, and then he was the personal assistant to Barrow's protege, Erskine Sandiford, from 87 to 1991. He's a critical cog in the wheel this morning, and I'm happy to welcome Mr. Leroy McLean. I have not declared party affiliations for him or anyone else on the program, because today we are all here as Barrow's children. One of Barrow's grandchildren would be Khalil Kothuwala, who is a sixth former at the Queen's College School. Khalil is well known to us on these programs. He's a vocal advocate on behalf of students who are facing clear and present challenges with the Caribbean Examination Council currently. But he's a well-known voice, and I welcome Khalil to this forum. And he is very familiar with radio, and he is going to have no difficulties speaking on behalf of Errol Barrow's grandchildren. George Pilgrim is one of Errol Barrow's children. He was General Secretary of the Democrat Labour Party for several years. He served both Thompson and Stuart. I'm not sure whether he actually met Errol Barrow. Persons in George's age group, like myself, may have had encounters with Errol Barrow when we were teenagers, but I'm not sure whether George did, but he can tell us about that later. George served both David Thompson and Frondell Stuart in those capacities that were supportive, and he's very keen on the issue of technology in education. I'm not sure George can join us for the whole program, but he has agreed to be with us for part of the program. So that's the panel. And gentlemen, I want to welcome you, and again to remind everyone that you can call and chat with the panel. We're going to have a brief interaction, and then we're going to open the floor to calls on 434-1790. The chat, we can get that running, is 266-IVOB. And then, of course, there's the email, peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. So, gentlemen, thank you for agreeing to be part of it. Thank you for breaking up your rest on Errol Barrow's Day, although with COVID and all other things, there's really not a whole lot else to do. So it's just as well that you were here. So, gentlemen, welcome. And I want to go immediately to Leroy McLean, because Leroy, I think you need to roll the pitch for this conversation, in as much as you're probably best able to speak to what Errol Barrow's vision for education might have been. You are also a child of Barrow, and then you had the distinct opportunity to work for him. So what exactly can we say was the Dipper's vision for education?
Thank you, Peter, and I will first say that Barrow did not see education as an end in itself, but as a means to an end. He linked the whole concept of more and better education to development. And in his words, he said, you know, I had a country to develop, and it could not develop it with only agricultural workers. So he therefore had to make educational opportunities available for people. And so, unfortunately, I think sometimes when we speak of Errol Barrow and education, we only see education as an end in itself. You know, people say, I want to have an education, or I want my children to be educated. But very often we do not go to the next point and say, what do we need this education for? And what are we going to do with it? And as I said, in summary, I would like to say that we can sum up Errol Barrow's vision as education as a means to an end, and that end being the development of Barbados.
Mm-hmm. All right. Leroy, there were two things I mentioned in the introduction. I mentioned the 11 plus, and I also mentioned the idea of free education. The University of the West Indies and Barbados Community College. Well, I mentioned four things, really. How would you say that let's start with the 11 plus. How would you say that the 11 plus has been useful in terms of creating a level of equality along with free education? And do you believe that that is still relevant in 2021?
Okay, the 11 plus at the time when it was instituted was absolutely necessary because there were a limited number of places in secondary schools, okay? You only had what you refer to as the grammar schools and a few other public secondary schools. Therefore, there was competition for spaces in these schools. So it was therefore necessary to have some way of determining who would get those places. In fact, what is now called the 11 plus, it originally was referred to as the screening test. In my day, it wasn't the 11 plus, it was called the screening test because people were actually screened to determine which schools you would go to or who would get into those schools. So at the time when it was implemented, it was necessary. Now, unfortunately, we did not move from... let me quickly say, one of the problems is that when we look at a system or what anything that is happening, we do not spend the time to go back to see why it was necessary. Why did we have to do this, right? Why did we have to implement a particular policy? If we do that, then we can look to say, well, is it any longer necessary or have we already dealt with the problem which we implemented this policy to solve? We solved the problem of the number of places. Therefore, we did not need to use the system, the common entrance, therefore, to determine whether people will get into secondary schools or not. So it then evolved into something which became very into an unfortunate state, in that now it evolved into something which determined not whether you will get into a secondary school, but it into a system where which secondary school you will get into, because persons had categorize one school as being better than the other, and everybody wanted to get into the best school. So the common entrance has become basically a lottery to determine who gets the best prize. And it is unfortunate that it is used, that it is seen in that way. Therefore, I would say in that regard, it is no longer necessary. However, the persons who are pushing for the abolition of the common entrance do not come up with, in my view, a feasible alternative. And again, it is because we do not seem to understand what is it that we are educating people for. Why are we educating people? what is the end towards which we are providing this education?
Leroy, before I go to Khalil, I want to press you on this issue because I had the honor of being taught by the Right Honorable Erskine Sandiford, who is still, I honestly thought that Sir Lloyd would have been an ideal panelist for today's program, because if there's a person that can speak to Barra's vision, it would be Sir Lloyd. Of course, he's not in a position that he can be part of the program today. I hope he's listening. But he did say to me once that a big part of the equation when we talk about this 11 plus was understanding that the Barbados Community College was actually part of that conversation, because he said he felt that by the time, or they felt that by the time the Barbados Community College was open, the Barbados Community College would have been a way of bringing the 11 plus to a close, because you could centralize secondary, post-secondary education, the A-levels, at the community college. And he said his initial idea was that if you did that, then you could discontinue sixth form education at all of the secondary schools other than the Barbados Community College, and you essentially have created a level of equality, so all the schools are equal. His argument was that the 11 plus would then have been less relevant, because it wouldn't have been a question of which school had a sixth form and which school didn't. However, the government, of course, in those days got cold feet and they didn't push it all the way. But he did make that point that the Barbados Community College was an evolution of the conversation that started with the 11 plus, that acknowledged that if you could educate everyone equally, there was really no need for this exam that screened some and separated some from the other, but it was relevant at the time. I don't know whether you want to respond to that or whether I could go directly to Khalil.
Yeah, I'd like to respond to that, because you see, I quite understand and agree with the point you're making, that which was made by Sir Lloyd. But at the core of the problem was that people still, regardless of what you did, people still saw Harrison College and Common Mirror, and at the time Lodge School, as the schools. And therefore, regardless of where you went to school, if you achieved, you got the greatest achievement in Barbados, the first question people would ask, which school you went to? So you had this old school network where the people who went to Harrison College perpetuated this myth that anybody who went to Harrison College was better than anybody who went to Common Mirror. People at Common Mirror felt the same way. People, and then you get this old school mentality where, I'll give you an example. A guy applied for a job once at one of Barbados' major institutions as a messenger. And the head of that institution was a former Harrisonian. And the guy who applied for the job as a messenger also went to Harrison College. And he said to him, you cannot work in here as a messenger and went to Harrison College. So you it is that attitude of the public towards the schools, that regardless of, in spite of the fact that Sir Lloyd at the time felt that the sixth form, the community college, would remove this, you still had this attitude that some schools are better than others, and therefore the competition continued, because people felt that if I went to Harrison College or if I went to Common Mirror, I have a better chance of moving ahead in Barbados than if I go to another school.
Okay. All right. I want to go now to Khalil. And Khalil, welcome to the program. All the best for 2020. Khalil is one of Barra's grandchildren, or Dennis suggested great-grandchildren, because he would have had no knowledge of our Barra, but I'm sure he would have heard about Barra's legacy. Khalil, you are currently among several students at the Queen's College who are having some challenges with the Caribbean Examination Council. Of course, CCXC is one of the institutions that Barra would have inspired. The question that I would ask you, do you believe that the institution, the Caribbean Examination Council, as a reflection of the broader educational system, is fit for purpose in 2021 for somebody who is your age?
Well, firstly, thank you. Thank you very much, Peter, for having me on the show. And I would like to wish everyone a happy Errol Barrow Day. I think bank holidays like this, quite apart from something like New Year's Day, really isn't an occasion for revelment or reverie, but serious reflection on our nationhood and on us as a people. But certainly, as you would have pointed out, I was born, I think, about around a decade and a half after Mr. Barrow would have shuffled off of this mortal coil. So I really am not authoritatively able to speak to his vision or his thoughts as someone like Dr. McLean would. But I can certainly speak from the perspective of what I have heard in many conversations or the tangible fruits of the Errol Barrow government. With specific reference, I think, to the Caribbean Examinations Council, the situation that has gone on there, I think, is deeply regrettable. You would have pointed out that the headquarters would have been established here under the Errol Barrow government. I will not make a sweeping declaration that they are not fit for purpose, but suffice it to say that over the last few years, they have demonstrated to some degree practices that are not wholesome to some extent, or more than that, practices that are not fully in keeping with the mandate of education. And that is fully to create citizens who are able to be economically viable, more than that, complete citizens. And in an environment where you are not engaging with teachers who have to deliver curriculum, or you're not engaging with students who have to do the exams, things like that, then you will clearly lead yourself into problems. But suffice it to say that the matter, that specific matter, might very well be sub judice. So I would not wish to prejudice that specifically. But certainly, you would see that the establishment of the headquarters of CXC is referenced in the manifesto of the Democratic Labour Party in 1976, and it points out that the Barbados is expected or should play a leading role in the creation of an exam system that will be more relevant to the needs of Caribbean students. So that in this environment, I think that the Barbados government has a unique role to play. Building on that, Errol Barrow was certainly a leader in the regional integration movement. So building on that, I think the Barbados government still has a huge role to play in this whole CXC, in reforming CXC going forward.
Back to you, Peter and panel.
Right. Okay, thank you, Keith, for that information. And of course, this is unfortunate that we're having an accident. No, Khalil, your point about the Caribbean Examination Council, to me, is the tip of the iceberg. I think part of the challenge that educational institutions are having now is that they're trying to deal with what is a relatively new phenomenon. They have been forced overnight to move a program that was delivered in person online. And I think that this COVID pandemic has highlighted efficiencies in the ability of our educational system to move in that way. You wouldn't recall this, Khalil, but I was on campus when university established something called UEDITE, which was distance teaching. And the idea of the distance teaching was essentially to get people to classrooms in the OECS without being in the OECS. It was an elaborate affair, which was done via satellite. Essentially, what we are doing now is a Zoom meeting, which ultimately is what the UEDITE was trying to achieve. Education, however, has not, in the classroom and certainly at the secondary level, hasn't really moved in that direction. So part of the challenge that CXC is having now is that it didn't anticipate this, and it hasn't really moved well enough to deal with it. But what I want to ask you also before we go to the telephones is if you can give me some idea of your general impression of our educational system's readiness. You go to one of the older secondary schools, so arguably you are among the more fortunate group. The question is the curriculum comprehensive? Does the curriculum adequately prepare you for the challenges that as a young person you think you would face? Do you believe that when you leave Queen's College, based on the offering at CXC and the way that it's delivered, that you are well equipped to take advantage of all of the opportunities that will face you in the global community and beyond? What was your sense of that?
Thank you, Peter. I think that Dr. McLean made a very good point in his opening that Mr. Barrow would have seen education not as an end in itself, but as a means to an end, and that end being development. Clearly, Barbados and the world certainly in 2020, 2021, is a lot different than it might have been in 1961. And I say that to say, therefore, that we face new development challenges, we face new outlooks, and to that extent, then, it must change how we look at education. And I think that COVID-19 has demonstrated or has unearthed really what has always been there, what has been there for some years. So these are not necessarily new problems or even a new phenomena, but simply a manifestation of what has existed for a while. But as it relates to your specific question, to some extent, we have a problem in education. And I say that to say that you reference the fact that I do go to Queen's College. I'm in Upper Six there now. And we have cultivated, I think, an unhealthy notion in this country and an unhealthy division in this country between older secondary schools and newer secondary schools. And we have created this chasm that exists between the two that really becomes unbridgeable. But what we therefore need to look at is how do we use education to be able to harness the aptitudes or the unique skills of different people? So that whereas at Queen's College, I might look at a more academic curriculum in some respects, at the same time, on a parallel track at Queen's College, we also look at the more technical and vocational side of things. You have the CVQ and things like that. But how do we broaden the scope for that? How do we say to persons in this country that it is okay, it is fine, it is fully acceptable for you to be interested or for you to be taught and instructed in those tech voc areas? And that is going to be a challenge I don't think can be solved by any government or any individual, because it requires a changing of our mindset entirely. In relation to whether the CXC exam necessarily is preparing students for the world, I think that we have gotten to a point where we may be forced to teach students towards an examination that might not necessarily be fully taking into account the skills that are needed. So when you look at something like the foreign languages, a lot of foreign language teachers, I think, have a fundamental problem with the nature of the examination, in that when you look at the structure of that exam, speaking specifically to foreign languages, it isn't really preparing students to be able to be conversant in the language or to truly have a mastery of the language. And that is a problem, because for what other reason are you going to become proficient in a foreign language but to use it in connection with employment around the world? So that these are clearly issues that arise, that we have persons who are on the ground, people like teachers, who apprehend and understand the challenges. And had we consulted with them more at those higher levels, I think that we could find our way out of these kinds of situations. But it requires us to understand where we are, and more than that, where we want to go, so that we need, when we understand our economic development and social development trajectory, modifying an education system that will suit that. Because right now, I am not sure that we have a system that will take us to where we think we want to go, whether that is with respect to diversifying our economy. All of these are relevant considerations that we, thus far, we haven't taken into consideration. I know the government has an education reform committee that is headed by Dr. Ida May Denny. I think the country is going to be very interested to hear the recommendations that flow from that committee.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Could I quickly say something? I think Khalil is making some very important points, right? And the one that I want to connect with immediately is the setting up of the CXC. Now, the CXC was set up by the governments of CARICOM, okay? Therefore, what CXC does should not be what CXC wants to do. The what CXC does should be a reflection of what the governments of the of CARICOM want and what they see as what is required for the development of this of this region. So it should not be a case where CXC determines that, okay, we are going to have examinations in this these subject areas, and this is going to be what it is. We therefore remain in a situation where we are getting certificates purely for the sake of getting certificates. If the region says we want to have a particular developmental path, therefore these are the subject areas that we need to put emphasis on, CXC would therefore then have to structure a curriculum which would deliver what is required by the governments. But what we have seen is that the governments of the region have basically not been influencing what CXC does. And perhaps if there were, we would not be in this situation now, because we would have put a lot more emphasis on the technical education from long ago. And therefore, what you said when UIDAIT was trying to do 20 years ago, which has not gone anywhere, and well, I can't say it hasn't gone anywhere since there's no distance really. Education. Sure. It has developed. But what I'm saying is that how many people do we have who can master what we need to do in a time like this? So COVID has only exposed the inefficiencies and the shortcomings of the system.